This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
It's great to have as our guest today Miss Amy Sommer. She's done a lot of important work in television and in a number of movies, but I want to talk to her about her role as executive producer when her own company that she co-founded, Sumford Productions, produced Waco, The Rules of Engagement, a very important documentary that was nominated for an Oscar and won an Emmy, and told the story about a horrific action by the U.S. government that in some way presages what the Bush administration has been doing around the world. And thank goodness you told that story, that this film is very much worth watching today. Get the DVD, watch it, buy it. And Amy, how did you get into that? What started you?
Well, it started with Dan Gifford, who was my fellow executive producer, and then my husband and now my ex-husband, but did admirable work in uncovering a lot of the documents. And that began a sort of slippery slope. And each rock we looked under, we found more and more information and more of a tale. And as documentary filmmakers, it had video attached with it too, so it wasn't just paper. So it was ripe to be filmed and to be exploited in that medium. And that's how it started, and then it just kept going and going and going.
You know, I mean, at the time I thought, you know, if the Soviet Union had pulled something like this, everybody would have known about it. I mean, there would have been college courses given on it. But somehow, because it happened by the U.S. government, frankly, nobody except for a very small number of people seemed to care about it. What seems to me the murder of a bunch of people, abuse of power by the federal police, and really something making war on a part of the American population that these days when we hear all kinds of talk about bringing combat brigades back to this country to do who knows what under President Bush. In some sense, it sort of started at Waco. Maybe this is a model for some of the things the government is going to do to us as well as to people in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places.
I wish it had only started in Waco. I think there's a long history of governments abusing their power and of defining people as the other and therefore making them inhuman and therefore it's a right to kill them or impose your will upon them. And I think that some of it is tragically human nature writ large when you have government power behind it. And it is, the Davidians were odd. They were different. They had chosen to live separately. So it was very easy to say they're weird. They're not us. They're them. And that leads to the slippery slope of dehumanization, which makes it easier to use them as ploys and whatever you want. I do think there are analogies for what is happening throughout the world, because we don't hear about the Iraqis who have died. There are estimates as high as 100,000. And they're still human beings, too, as much as our soldiers. And it is a very slippery slope of us and them.
No, it's true. I mean, it's the old overman-underman distinction. And certainly this has been true whenever the U.S. government has a country it wants to go to war against. It begins by demonizing the other population. I remember one of the big criticisms on the right against Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 documentary was that he showed street scenes of normal people in Iraq going to a playground, going into a restaurant, walking on the street before regular buildings, thereby showing that these are real people, regular people. And people like Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly denounced him for slightly undoing some of the demonization.
No, and it is tragic because once you realize they're human and they are a lot more like us and that an Iraqi mother cries just as hard for her lost child as an American mother, it's much harder to sanction killing them or invading their country or taking it over.
Do you think that there were any lessons learned from Waco, or is the whole thing just entirely forgotten? I remember at the time that it was highly politically incorrect to express any dissent on Waco. I mean, reporters, I've come to have actually pretty much no respect for any reporter in the mainstream media since the Iraq War and all the subsequent developments. But at the time, I was startled that they all seemed terrified to address this, to even discuss it, to take anything but the FBI line on it.
Well, I think they're twofold. First, I don't think it's completely forgotten. Certainly, I'm on this podcast, which is, I think is proof of that. But second of all, I do think that the lessons learned, that it was, that they were different, they were odd, but you can't, that's not a reason or justification for murder or for setting up a scenario where they would murder themselves. I think that has made it, I think that it's much harder to do that nowadays. You see the protest over Iraq. You do see questions. You do see, wait a second, sort of thinking. Maybe something isn't as it seems. And you do see questioning of the mainstream media and of the press releases issued by government agencies. That said, I do think that the reporters at the time did sort of buy lock, stock, and barrel the official story. And I don't think it was a big conspiracy necessarily. I think it was twofold. One, they were kept miles away from what was actually happening, so they didn't have a view. And they had the pressure of having to make report news, and whatever was made that day was controlled by the FBI. And the people, the flacks they had there, press flacks they had there. So I think a lot of it has to do with the 24-hour news cycle, that there's such pressure to produce stuff that you have to get a story. And because of that pressure, because the pipeline is never ending and is very, very greedy for material, you have to go with the people who are going to be your source over and over again. And I think that's more of it than any necessarily wanting to turn a blind eye.
Well, I agree that they don't want to turn a blind eye. They want to turn a seeing eye towards the government.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they know that one doesn't enhance one's career by opposing what the federal government really wants, whether it's the bailout today or whatever the next thing that Bernanke and Paulson pull, or whether it was the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Vietnam, or any other government activity that's really central to the state, the war on drugs. If you oppose that, if you, as a reporter, you ask the wrong kinds of questions, doesn't that hamper your career?
I would imagine it does. You don't get access to the press conferences. And I always think the conspiracy that exists is what I call the dinner party conspiracy, that there is a desire to be invited to all the right places. And at those right places is where you meet the newsmakers, and that's how you get news, and that's how you advance. And it's sort of a catch-22. You end up in the spiral where your view becomes more insulated because you're going to the same dinner parties, quote-unquote, over and over again, and because those dinner parties provide fodder for the news, so you get more stories, so you keep going, and et cetera, et cetera.
I have a friend who always reminds me that the Latin origin of the word conspiracy is conspiratio, that is a breathing together.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it is breathing the same, what some would call the same rarefied air, but it is breathing in the same circles.
Are we going to ever make any progress undoing what seemed to me clearly the federal lies about the whole situation? Because if you listen to the government story, as is, I guess, every story the government tells, it's spotless, it's peerless, it did everything right, and whoever it killed is, of course, entirely deserved to be killed.
Well, I think that's partially human nature writ large, that we always like to think we've done the right thing. And especially, I don't think in this administration, self-analysis is a strong suit of theirs.
No.
To try to be kind, which is really hard, I have to admit. But I don't think the government will go back and look it over. I think that maybe in a few years, once it is really history, there'll be more of an examination. But because it is not that long ago, and because some of the people who were there are still in the bureaucracy, and because it is so essential to human nature and how governments operate, I'm not sure it'll be undone. I do think it'll start to be questioned. I do think that, I mean, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I do like to think the fact that our film is still talked about and still out there. We have a very active conversation on our website as well, www.waco93.com. I can't resist.
No, please, absolutely. Give it again, please.
Waco93.com.
Great.
And then I do think that it is questioned and there are more views coming out. And the fact that now you have more documentaries and you have easier access to digital equipment to make them and podcasts, and there are so many other streams of information, that it is more likely to be questioned. And it is, future events are more likely to be questioned more quickly simply because, quote-unquote, mainstream media is not as dominant.
Amy, when I was working with Congressman Ron Paul, we sold a lot of copies of your film. And
for which we appreciate it much. Thank you.
I've always thought the world of it. Anybody who's not seen it, you absolutely need to get a copy of Waco, The Rules of Engagement. Watch it, learn from it, and I'm afraid it's not about the past, it's about the future. So, Amy Sommer, thanks so much for all the work you've done, very courageous work, and thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for listening and for your time. We appreciate your support.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.